Hey friends, welcome to today's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. I'm your host, Katie, and today I had the pleasure of interviewing another fitness expert in this field who shares her story about fitness and how it's influenced her, not just personally, but how it has evolved her professionally. And I don't know about you, but that is probably one of my favorite things about podcasting, being a listener, being an interviewer, is that we get to hear stories, right? And we get to hear experiences and situations from the lens of somebody else. And I think when we can do that, the more that we can put ourselves in someone else's shoes and just listen to what it is that they're going through, listen to the words that they use. You know, it feels like we're in a coffee shop, which maybe that's part of it too. We just are craving human connection right now. But it feels like, you know, you're sitting at the table and you're having a conversation. And when we're able to listen and share stories and truly listen, like active listening and understanding and comprehending, you know, the words, it makes us more empathetic. It makes us, I believe, just better humans because we're better able to connect. We're better able to understand in a different perspective than our own. So before we get into today's story, that's what I'm going to start calling these. I'm going to call them stories, not episodes. I want to share this week's podcast review. Now, remember the past month, I guess it's been now, we have been doing a podcast review, reading the reviews that you guys write. And if you hear your review read, you win free stuff. So this review comes from AD Ashley, and I think I know who that is, but she says, "Can't recommend more. I love, love, love this podcast. Finding this podcast has led me to making healthy changes in all parts of my life. Katie is knowledgeable and brings on a variety of other experts. So thankful that I found this podcast. Check it out." Well, Ashley, I'm more thankful that you found this podcast, and I'm so thankful that you left a review sharing what you love, because this is how, I know you guys don't care about ranks and all that stuff, but you know, the power of podcasting is that we can connect with people and hear stories, right? Hear and share stories from all over the world. And if you've been following me for any time, you know that part of my mission, part of my, you know, purpose in life is to share this message of non-dieting. And when we realize that we can, when we let go of the numbers and we focus on what we feel, we can learn to be confident in our bodies and our brains. Like, we can freaking change the world. And so by you leaving a review, by you taking the time to subscribe, you know, share this with a friend, that means everything, because that helps to expand our reach, to share that message, to save even more women who've been through our struggles, who are going through our struggles. And, you know, who knows, we may be able to prevent somebody from experiencing the same pain. So Ashley, send us an email. Our email is fitfriendshappyhour@gmail.com. And so we can give you some free stuff. Dr. Meredith is a doctor of physical therapy, certified strength and conditioning coach, certified exercise physiologist, Pilates yoga instructor, and that's just the tip of the iceberg on her long list of certifications. She believes that you can discover which movements will help you feel amazing in your body and stay off the sidelines of sport, fitness, and life, whether you have 1 minute or 100. Today, we talk about her personal journey with fitness from super uncoordinated, awkward kid, can't, you know, dribble a ball in gym class to winning physique competitions. And I'm telling you guys, these are not normal physique competitions. Just wait till you hear the tricks and amazing skills. Like, it's more than just body. It is function. It is fun. So she's won many competitions. And I do want to give a disclaimer that you're going to hear a part of Dr. Meredith's story where she refers to some comments that were made to her by a doctor due to her BMI, or what we call our body mass index. And I just want to remind you that this tool was invented over 200 years ago by a mathematician who knew nothing about the human body. And I plan to do a follow-up episode on this topic of BMI, because I got in a rabbit hole just thinking about BMI and, you know, just the comment. I know we've had this conversation on previous episodes. If you listened to the interview I did with Megan and Mackenzie on PCOS and some of the other health conditions, we talked a lot about doctor's visits and how sometimes data can be presented to us as a patient, and it can be really triggering in terms of weight and diet and body image and all those things. So just a little disclaimer, just a little reminder, just a little tap on the back, whisper in your ear that if anyone ever tries to use BMI to shame you into gaining or losing weight, just forget them. Listen to next week's episode and just remember that there's so much more to health. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. I am on a mission to help you redefine the word fit, to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fears. Dr. Meredith Budelis, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, love to. Glad you're having me on to share with your audience.
We are recording this via Zoom and Dr. Meredith has this beautiful backdrop and it's just beautiful. And it's making me wish that I was at the beach.
I wish I was at the beach too. I'm in Minnesota.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. And I've heard your story of, you know, you were the kid who failed gym class more than once, but then you went on to, you know, compete in fitness. And now you have just a gamut of certifications and you're an expert in our industry. So tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, it's been a journey. It's amazing, but I failed gym class twice and it in the same year. And it wasn't because I didn't try. I was just bad at moving. Like, I was bad at running. I was always not just last, but like really last. Like 20 minutes after the other kids finished their 1 mile run, I was still like out of air trying to run the mile. And I couldn't pass that. And then we were playing all these different sports, a lot of volleyball and stuff. It's like, oh, I could never get the ball over the net. And I would go in and I actually practiced before gym. And my gym teachers knew I went to the gym and I practiced and I like said, can I have a volleyball? Can I practice? And I'd practice like an hour every morning. And I was truly bad at moving, like really, really bad. So you would think I'd kind of just give up. I actually did find a passion in dance, but I just kind of grew up in a poor family, so I couldn't afford a lot. So I worked out a deal with a studio owner in our local town in Dayton, Ohio, and I actually would clean the floors and help with things just to get enough money to pay for a couple dance classes and do some performances. But I loved it, but I wasn't good at it. I was the kid that like couldn't control my head and couldn't control my turns. It was probably going left when the rest of the class was going right, but it didn't mean I didn't love it. So when I got to college, I actually became a dance minor and I ended up dancing professionally in Boston a little bit while I was still in school, more in modern and jazz, just because those genres offered a little bit different vocabularies of movement. And that was really encouraging. But then college ended and I was like, okay, well, I'm done moving. So fell off the wagon, ended up with the body mass index over 40, which for those listening to the call, when your body mass index is over 30, your doctor's going to tell you to do something about it. They're going to be like, hey, you need to change your diet. You need to change what you're doing. And I just couldn't find anything I liked to do. I was just like, this isn't for me. A lot of adults work out. I don't like to work out. I really thought gym was for, pardon the expression, but meatheads. I thought the gym was for meatheads, like people that really wanted to knock out some weights, like, you know, Arnold Classic. And I was on the treadmill one day, hating every minute of it. I was like, oh, the doctor told me to go work out. I better do something. And I was just miserable. And a trainer comes up to me and he goes, hey, do you want to compete in bodybuilding? And I'm like, this is the exact reason I'm not here. This is the exact reason I did not want to enter the door of this gym. And I was like, I'm pretty sure in my 10 years in Boston, I acquired some pretty direct habits. And I was like, get lost. And I didn't mean that, like, come back and find me again later. I meant like, this is the exact reason I did not want to come to a gym and work out. And sure enough, I'm not even sure how this happened, but 6 weeks later, I ended up on the stage in a bodybuilding competition.
Oh my goodness. And
I will say that I didn't really look like most of the other competitors. Like, you couldn't see a muscle on my body. I was obese by a technical classification of obese. over 30% body fat, but somehow, I don't know what happened that day, but I was like, came in dead last. And I was like, I love this. I want to do this. And so something about the environment, and it wasn't even, the other competitors weren't friendly towards me. They were kind of unfriendly because they were like, this one doesn't belong here. I didn't belong. And I wasn't like them. And so I don't know. I have no idea. I was just like, this is for me. And so after that, I went to that trainer and I was like, can you teach me a little bit about lifestyle transformation? Because even though I had a degree in physical therapy, believe it or not, nutrition was not part of my program at all. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know. I need to get back on the stage next year. And he's like, well, yeah, sure. So I actually became his client for a little bit of time and got on a better training regimen that supported lean muscle mass and learned a lot about, I can't just go have French fries and beer every night. And that was the beginning of a change. Now, that was for physique. That was stage competition. And I did that for years and loved it. I've been doing stage competitions like that in physique for, wow, like since 2006 was my first year. And I've been doing 2, 3, 4. Obviously, COVID-19 got in the way this year, so my plans are a little altered, but 2 or 3 or 4 competitions in a normal year. And I think 3 years ago, somebody put in my head and they said, hey, come out and try TriFit. And I was like, what is TriFit? And they said, well, the fitness routine, the tumbling, the acting, the dancing, the stuff you love, that's 1 of 7 rounds. And there's other rounds out there like bench press and box jump and shuttle run and obstacle course racing. And I was like, oh no, those aren't for me. And they said, well, you know, you can pick and choose.
Like, remember, I'm the girl from gym class. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, those aren't, I was like, I like the physique thing, but I don't like the rest of it. And they're like, well, you can sign up for any event you want. There's 7 events. So I was like, okay, well, I'll sign up for physique and I'll sign up for fitness. And I got out there, Coach Al, who runs the event, he had posted my name on 3 other rosters I didn't sign up for. He posted me on the box jump. He posted me on 1 of the obstacle courses and I think the sprint. And I go up to him and I was like, hey, I didn't register for these. And he goes, you have a choice. That day you either show up and you do it or you just say scratch. And then he walked away.
Oh man.
And I was like, it's like, all right, well, if I'm here, like, I can physically run. I probably can't do a box jump, but I could step onto a box and that's allowed. So I'll step on a box and I can do these things at a fundamental level. So I got out there, did the things at a fundamental level and had all these people who I'd never met in my life cheering for me. And I was like all wrapped up in the moment cheering for all these people I've never met in my life. And I'm like, wow, this is contagious. So I went to Coach Al then and I was like, thank you. I was like, next year I'm coming back and I'm doing all 7 events. Sure enough, came back, did all 7 events. And actually my first year out with TriFit, I ended up winning the fitness competition, which was shocking. I'd actually never won a competition with more than 10 competitors in my entire fitness competitive career. So that was the beginning of a turning point. And the second turning point was when he said, you know what, I have lots of people over 40 that can get out there. He's like, all you have to do is be willing to try. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this. So last year, went back, competed in everything, ended up breaking my foot 20 minutes before my first round. I was warming up and I hit cement. I came out of the air about 3 feet in the air, came straight down on my toe.
Oh no.
Broke my foot. I knew at the time I had broken my foot. And I was like, I literally said to myself, I did not come this far. It was the World TriFit competition. It's like, I did not come this far to come this far. And I was like, I didn't tell him because I knew he would have had to pull me. And I was like, I don't know what's about to happen 20 minutes from now, but I'm going to get out there and I'm going to compete. And did, ended up placing 2nd.
Wow.
So I was like, even though I can look at the video and be like, yeah, some of those skills are off. Because when you break a big toe, that's 60% of your power and 60% of your balance are gone.
Oh my
God. Ran on my heels because I was like, okay, I don't have a choice to run on my toes. There aren't any.
Yeah.
And then before the second day of competition, I told Corey, my significant other who was with us, I was like, hey, we need to stop by CVS on the way into the competition. And he's like, why? I was like, I broke my foot and I need to use a roll of tape to build a flexor hallucis longus in my toe because I don't have one right now. And he was like, I'm not going to ask. So I took an entire roll of kinesio tape and built out a muscle that I decided that it wasn't going to work that day and took a lot of Advil. And no, I'm not advocating that for anybody on this podcast.
Do not use, not as I do.
Don't use sports medicine trichology. Yes, we have sports medicine trichology, but please don't. It's not the safest idea, especially when you can't assess the degree of the injury for yourself. So being a provider in physical therapy and understanding the risks I would have taken, I said, hey, I'm doing this anyway. I'm taping my toe back on, and we're just going to go for this. When I get back to Minnesota in 3 days, I'll run it through the x-ray and decide how badly exactly did I damage that situation. So the turning point, the biggest turning point, was having one person say, yes, you can. He literally said to me, yes, you can. And I asked him, I actually hired him to coach me just for one visit while I was out in Tampa. Mm-hmm. And he showed me, he's like, you can jump on a box. You just don't know you can jump on a box. And I'm like, no, my coach told me my Achilles are too short. My other coach told me I'm just not powerful enough. And he's like, that's not, just do this. He's like, stop thinking and start doing.
What was the, I mean, you talk a lot, obviously, of the physical transformation that happened, but what was going on mentally, especially, you know, through going from this, it doesn't sound like you were very active, to, you know, training for a competition. That is a way of life, right? You know, it's a lot of dedication, a lot of hours. What was the mental transformation that happened as well?
Ooh, that's been an interesting one, just because I have been competing since 06. So the first 5 years were rough, because I would think of it as, this is a fitness competition. There's a very specific diet that goes with that. And I would say, okay, I'm 16 weeks out, so I need to adhere to this diet to get on the stage in 16 weeks. Mm-hmm. And it's frustrating, because you crave stuff, you get headaches, there's just all these weird side effects. So I would go, I compete it 3 times a year because I need the accountability. If I didn't do it, I would fall off the wagon. So I kept going old lifestyle, new lifestyle, old lifestyle, new lifestyle, old lifestyle, new lifestyle for about 5 years. And one day I was like, I literally said to myself, this sucks. I am not doing this anymore. And at that point I said, you know what? Let's be 80% good 80% of the time. So yes, I'm going to eat chocolate every day. Yes, I'm going to have ice cream every week. Yes, I'm going to work out every day, but every day is going to be 45 minutes. I'm going to work out for 45 minutes and I'm going to listen to my body. So at that point I said, my coaches were saying, hey, lift more weights, lift more weights. And I was like, you know what? My body is screaming at me. It will not. It's the spark plugs are gone. So I had to really respect and say, what does this human body do? And say, okay, I can lift weights for 45 minutes, 4 days a week. That's reasonable. I can do ballet 1 day a week, and I can do yoga 1 day a week. And that's where I started realizing and starting seeing the transformation in my body, where everything just stuck. When people say, hey, how far out are you on a fitness competition? I'm like, I'm 2 weeks away from competing. All I need to do is make sure that I have the right costumes and I have the right choreography for whatever that competition is. Yes, I changed my diet for 2 weeks. No, I don't starve. The only thing I do is I take out dairy, just because I love dairy. And so I take that out, substitute it with a little lower calorie food that is not dairy, and bam, 2 weeks ready for the stage. And it has just been amazing and wonderful to say, let's be 80% good. Let's listen to my body, do what my body asks, and realize that I cannot hammer it into submission. I can't do what other people do necessarily, because we're all individual.
What did you find, you know, being in this industry for so long, what are some of the, you know, the challenges or kind of that, we talk a lot about intuitive eating and, you know, kind of this non-diet approach on Fit Friends Happy Hour. So what are some of the negatives that you saw kind of in your early stages of competing, and how that was detrimental, you know, from, you mentioned the physical, but also the mental aspect?
Yeah, I think when we think of the idea of diet or show prep, the classical physique competitors, or people who just say, hey, I want a different physique, you think in deprivation. And when you think in deprivation, you start getting the fog hag, you start getting the headaches, your body starts fighting with you. And you get those thoughts, and your coaches a lot of times will say, you don't want this bad enough. You're not trying hard enough. You know, stop cheating. You're self-sabotaging. And you hear and feel all this negative talk. And it's both coming externally and then it's feeding internally. And it doesn't work. It might work for one show, but that's where we get people saying, I'm one and done. That was on the bucket list. Out of here. So it's very, very different when you adopt a lifestyle that, yes, you know what's good. And sometimes you have to set boundaries with yourself and say, yes, I realize half a gallon of ice cream is not cohesive with my goals. It doesn't mean I'm not going to eat a pint, because I am. I'm just not going to do it every single night.
Yes, absolutely. So it sounds like moving away from a lot, like you said, shifting, you know, it's possible to have physique goals to, because a lot of times we find people, they think, well, I can't eat intuitively, but also have these goals for physique or for, you know, a fitness aspect. But like what you're saying, that's really the difference in you can, but it is a lot of really changing the way that you look at foods, the way that you talk to yourself is a big piece of it.
That's huge. And I always ask myself when I want something, is this congruent with my goals? Because I am going to have the chocolate, I am going to have the ice cream, and I know that I can have maybe 6 pieces of the chocolate a day and still maintain this physique. That's just what I've learned. So if I want something that's really, really, really inconsistent, I recognize it and I say, hey, this is a treat. This is not an everyday activity, but it can still be part. So it's very inclusive. And I just sometimes have to draw the boundary and be like, yeah, 4 cans of soda today. That's incongruent with my goals. Maybe I'll do it today, but I'm not going to continue that tomorrow. It's not going to be a snowball.
Yeah, it's a different dialogue that you have with yourself. So we share the same views of, you know, mm-hmm. working smarter, not harder. So what does that mean to you, and how have you, you know, incorporated that with your own training, but also with the work that you do with clients?
Yeah, that's been super interesting. So I think I discovered it in myself first, where I realized that the more I try to work my body, so if I try to work out 10 hours a week, things start falling apart. So my body will break down. You'll see injuries show up. I'll get really tired, really fog-headed, like hard to find words, get so fatigued that it even creeps into my work, which that's not okay. There needs to be that boundary there. And when I try to lose that last little bit, we call it the water weight, to get on the stage, it can't be done. So the problem is that you're creating an overtrained state relative to the body. Now, 10 hours a week, a lot of people are like, well, that's my normal. And it might be somebody else's normal. Other people maybe have to do 10 hours a week. But if I get to the gym, I say, here are my 45 minutes. Here are my 6 days a week. 4 days are lifting. 1 day is yoga. 1 day is ballet. Then there's kind of a up in the air day, depending on what I feel like. But if I get there and it's a lift day, I'm like, I don't feel like doing this. My rule with myself is get on the treadmill, walk at 3 miles an hour for the next 45 minutes or until you get tired of doing that. And it's okay. Let it go. Just meet yourself where you are today. Or if I didn't sleep for a couple days, maybe had a big project, I've been up all night, been working on it. Like, you know what? Adding this cortisol elevation to cortisol elevation is going to equal cortisol mess. So that's a whole nother topic. But if I haven't slept or if I haven't had nutrition to support my workouts, I just let it go. I'm like, you know what? Walking or yoga. Yoga is my fallback as well. So that started with me, but then I got into heart rate variability studies. So heart rate variability, that looks at how our nervous system talks to our bodies. It's like our central control switch. And when you're really in like fight or flight mode, there's a lot of things in your body that it's great temporarily if you need to run away from a lion, but most of us should not be spending our entire day running away from lions here in the US, at least. I haven't seen an actual lion.
We hope not.
So,
right?
You know, it has its time, it has its purpose, it has its place. But I always need to come back and say, if I'm in this heightened state all the time, what can I do to bring that back down? And that's where we need to say, how do I talk to my nervous system? So I actually did a huge randomized controlled trial, which is a very high-level research study. We did this 2 years ago, and I don't know, fingers crossed, eventually it will get published. But we took 150 people.
That's awesome.
Probably overtrained going into it when we really get to the nitty-gritty of their data. And one group we took through high intensity Tabatas. So those are like work out all out for 20 seconds or 40 seconds, depending on the protocol, and then recover for 20 seconds, 8 rounds through. For this group, we had to use only body weight because that's what we were approved to do by our review board. And we took them through this twice a week for 6 weeks. And then we split the group in half, and the other group had to do yoga for those same amount of times. And it was just a very kind of a nice vinyasa flow, but you probably broke a sweat doing it. But it was not high intensity at all. And we took a bunch of measures before and after. And what we discovered in the group that had to do the yoga was that everything improved. Their cardiovascular endurance improved, their strength and muscle endurance improved. And then really, really interesting, we tested them on a single leg long jump. And there are so many studies out there about how do we make your right side and left side equal. And people have tried just about the whole potpourri of things you could think of. Interestingly, we were not expecting this. My yoga group became symmetrical.
Oh, that's really interesting. Huh.
Yeah, it was very curious because all the workouts were both sides of the body. Like the Tabata workout wasn't one-sided. The yoga workout wasn't one-sided. But they became symmetrical in a power jump when there was no power at all in their workout. It violates everything we know about specificity of training. And what we hypothesize happened, and we you know, certainly can't prove this happened, but that we regulated the nervous system. And there are other studies out there that indicate that might have been what we did. So it showed us.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. Like more strength, more power, more endurance, more cardiovascular by just saying, body, simmer down. Like, let's respect this and let's feel better.
Yeah, I think you bring up such a you know, huge point that so many active women struggle with, and they refuse to kind of see, recognize the signs and the symptoms of your body just tired, you know. So what are some of the other signals, I guess, for you personally that you find tell you, okay, I've got to slow down, or I need to rest today, or what does that look like to you?
Yeah. The biggest test for me is on Friday night, am I willing to go down 3 flights of stairs and get my laundry? Or am I like, no, I can't get off this couch. I am glued to this couch and it's going to wait till tomorrow. Nobody's going to take my laundry. It's going to wait. So when I find those things like, I'm really not going to do my meal prep this week. I don't like meal prep anyway. But when I'm like animately like glued to a couch, I'm just like, I can't get up. That is too much. That is way too much. Brain fog is way too much. Getting fog-headed, forgetting things, that's way too much. I've had actually a lot of women ask me, like, don't you get fog-headed after a workout? And I'm like, heck no, something's wrong if that's happening. I'm like, we've mismatched our carbs to our workout intensity, or maybe something along those lines.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point of just things, how to listen to your body, identify for yourself, you know, what are your own kind of signals of when I do XYZ, that's a sign. What have I been doing the rest of the week that hasn't been respecting my body in terms of rest and recovery? So you talked about a little bit about your background in dance and gymnastics, and those were some of the types of movement that you really fell in love with. Mm-hmm. How did you find that shaped, you know, your relationship with movement growing up, right? Because you mentioned you hated gym, but you enjoyed these types of movements. But then after college, it just felt like it kind of stopped.
Mm-hmm. That was an interesting transformation. And when I look at it as a kid, I mean, we all want what we're told we can't have, right? Regardless of what that is. And I didn't have the money to do it. So my access was very, very limited because I had to work for every training session I got. Like I had to legitimately go clean floors, go help kids go to the bathroom, like whatever it was, just to get enough money to get the exchange of the service. And I mean, that was since age 9. So it was a forbidden fruit, but yet something intrinsically told me I was in the right place somehow, even though I wasn't good at it. And when I went to college, it was a little bit of a wide open door because yes, I was paying my tuition, but I was a really good student. And when you're a really good student and you don't have any more resources, you know, sometimes schools will work with you and they'll let you take more credits than you should. So what I ended up doing was taking my regular classes from 8 to 12 every day and dancing from 1 to 10 every night just to get the training. So I was really doing a lot of makeup training hours, but I loved it so much. It was like this unquenchable thirst. But then what I found is when I started dancing for professional companies is not having that training earlier in life, I wasn't as talented as the other dancers. I had to work a lot harder. So where they could pick up a combination, I would have to videotape it, first of all, which when I grew up, that was hard to do because I actually had to buy a VHS camcorder and haul the thing around to videotape it so I could go back and watch it on my VHS player and learn the choreography. But I was putting in five times as much work as everybody else. And then I had to add, okay, I got to get a real world job here. It's not just school anymore. So you add the job hours plus the actual rehearsal hours plus the performance hours plus the fact I had to work five times harder than everybody else just to be in the back row. It just became exhausting. And at that point, I was like, you know what? I'm ready to be done with this.
So it was almost like you hit this point of burnout after all of it. It was like you said, exhausted, not just physical, but mental energy, literally hours and time. And
yeah. And it became a problem too, because I did some choreography and I actually started my own dance company. And we actually were choreographed and hired around Boston for some small gigs. But it became a problem because my right brain, the creative one, would turn on at 3 o'clock in the morning. So I was actually at a summer intensive and I sent my knee through the wall of a Duke dorm room. And I had to explain that to the housing people. And I was like, no, I was actually sleeping when this happened. So it was really messing with my sleep. So I have to be very, very careful with creative brain to keep creative brain in check.
Yeah.
Because it was literally like, you have all these hours of work, you have all these hours of rehearsal, you have all these hours you're putting in extra. And then creative brain says at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to do all your choreography for you. Fantastic. So now I'm not sleeping at all. So needless to say, that actually contributed to the whole gain of the, you know, weight gain and eating sugar just to stay awake. I could down a 1 pound bag of M&Ms with no side effects easily. I'd just be like, and here we go, because I need to stay up right now. So that led to a lot of poor behaviors in terms of health and wellness that I needed to get away from.
What was it that you felt like, because you had such a different, you know, relationship with exercise kind of in that moment. And, you know, it doesn't sound like you really looked at it as exercise, right? It was just movement. So what was that like transitioning? And we talked about this a little bit, but from kind of that dancer background, work, 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 to making this more of this is a lifestyle and finding those motivators.
Yeah. I'll admit that I actually ended up moving states, which is what changed the whole environmental dynamic for me. So I moved from Boston to Minnesota on a job transfer. And at that point, it took away the commitment and the pressure to continue the lifestyle I was in. But at the same time, in my new state, it was hard to connect with anything, resonate with anything. Mm. So it was just like, okay, you know, health and wellness and fitness were not meant to be part of my life. And that sounds funny coming from a healthcare provider, because I'm a sports and dance med physical therapist, but we don't always lead the lives that we lead in our occupation. Like sometimes we like helping people with things, but it's not part of our own lifestyle. And I think we see that so many times in occupations, regardless of what your occupation is. Like, let's say you're a hairstylist. Maybe you love doing other people's hair, but at the end of the day, you go home and you're like, I'm not doing my own hair. I'm not cutting my family's hair. Forget that. And I think we've all been there in some regard. Like,
right. That's a great way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. You take what your occupation is and what you've been trained to do. And let's say you're a professional chef. You get home and your family's like, oh, cook me that nice dinner. And they're like, no. So it was to learn to live the life that I walk, both occupationally and in my own life. It took that moment of that trainer saying, hey, do I compete in bodybuilding? And me saying, absolutely not. You're nuts. To just getting back on the stage. And I think something was just re-sparked and saying, yeah, I do love the stage. Like even right now with COVID-19, I can't compete because the competitions aren't happening, at least not in any accessible area to me. And I'm like, this is not complete. Like, I'll see a stage shot from last year and I'll be like, I'm not complete without this. So it was a big transformation.
Mm. What are some of the things that you love most about competing?
For me, it's an art form. So I'm a fitness competitor. I'm one of the ones that dances and tumbles and does all that stuff. But I look at, okay, there's a music person. There's a costume person. I do my choreography. I bounce it off some other people. And when we compete, we are in live lighting. There's no tech rehearsal. So for me, it's like, how do all these things come together? All these artists come together. They've never met each other. They never even talked to each other. Yet this common denominator shows up and shines and just hopefully makes people happy. I always try to pick something that's either really dramatic or really happy, but like we can really feel. And if the audience can just get out of their heads and just enjoy the moment, that's amazing.
I love that you do these different competitions, because I guess I didn't even realize that they existed, because, you know, most people think of the standard bodybuilding physique competition. They think mm-hmm. you walk on stage, mm-hmm. you flex your muscles, and that's it. You know, so hearing that perspective, I think really just goes to show that there's just so many different aspects of fitness and movement, and it doesn't have to be just exercise, just mm-hmm. the way your body looks, right? There's kind of these other art forms to it, really.
Yes, for sure.
How do you integrate the way that you look at competing and the, you know, kind of the art form around fitness and wellness, and how do you transfer that kind of into your clients?
Yeah, well, half my clients are artists of various natures.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just because I do dance and sports med. So half of them wow. are dancers or, you know, some kind of an mm-hmm. artist. So that carries over a lot, because it's a very, yeah. it's a different way of thinking. And we're trying to get our muscles to coordinate in different ways mm-hmm. that are, they have a less set trajectory and a less set and less studied pathway. So there's a lot of artistry that goes into that. And I even talk about some of my favorite surgeons and I'm like, oh no, this is an artist of the hip. This is an artist of the foot. Because they understand, like, what does this really need to do relative to this person's goals as an individual? Not just how do I repair an ankle ligament, but how do I make the ligament just right so that person can stand back on point shoes? So that's part of the fun of it for me, is going, okay, how do I fine tune this? How do we make this just right? And every individual is literally so individual in that fine tuning process. But so are my athletes too. So there is always an art form on top of the evidence, on top of what does research tell us? What does medicine tell us? So I love the fact that we get to combine all the brainy science side with the artistry of how do I meet the individual where they're at and try to help them move towards their goals, or figure out, my favorite phrase is, how can I? And how do we work together to figure out how can I, whatever that sentence ends in, whether that's soccer or lift weights or lift my kids or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. So really, like you said, in individualizing it, I love how you, I think I read somewhere in your blog or something, you know, whether you can do 1 minute mm-hmm. or 5 minutes or 45 minutes, like let's figure out what works for you. So what are some of the biggest struggles that you find your clients have?
Normally it's time. Right now we're in a little different situation in quarantine. But normally nobody has any time.
Right.
So that's where I really dive in. And I think in my early years as a physical therapist, I missed the boat. I missed the opportunity here. And now I actually spend most of my opportunity here. And I'll say, walk me through your day. Like, tell me what you do. So let's say somebody has, you know, a nagging shoulder injury. And I'll say, well, how do you brush your teeth? Because a lot of times there are things we're already doing in life. We get up, we comb our hair, we brush our teeth, we drive our car, we make our coffee, whatever that is. And I'm like, well, if we could just move your shoulder 1 centimeter in that direction while you do these 10 things that are already in your life, yes, you have to focus on it just to relearn it, but your shoulder's going to get better without me even doing 100 exercises. Like, maybe just give me 3. And now how am I going to stick those things into your work day, into your sports day? So I try to binding it to the tasks of your life. And the more I can bind to the tasks of your life, you're going to be an efficient mover in your own body and then move away from those pain and kind of problem areas that are getting you stuck. And it's been really interesting too, because it's not just about pain, but like one guy, I needed to get his left glute working, and he comes back and he's like, oh, I just PR'd my bench press. And I'm like, yeah, why do you think you did that? And he's like, because my left glute works. I'm like, yep, you ever thought about your glute doing a bench press? He's like, not until now. So you have those moments where athletes are like, wow, I just jumped higher. I just got picked for this tour. I had somebody was just picked for Disney on Ice, had somebody else go out on a golf tour overseas. But it's just really rewarding when people, they had this goal in the back of their head. They were afraid to say it. Maybe they told me after I got to know them, but they're like, oh, that's not a public goal. I'm not going to announce that. And I've been there, and I'm still there a lot of times. People are like, what's your next competition? I'm like, I'll tell you later. And it's not that I don't know. It's that I'm, you know, it's a big goal, and I'm afraid to say what it is, afraid to own it. And when they finally step into that ownership of that goal that they wouldn't even announce to the world because they were so afraid of it, that's amazing. That's amazing. And a lot of it comes back to, how did you slightly tweak what you were doing and just make that 1 millimeter adjustment and make those 1 millimeter adjustments throughout your day? It's not about a whole new training plan. It is not about working out 10 hours a week. It is about taking what you do and just tweaking like 1 to 2%.
And that's such a greater message too, of just, you know, incorporating this small change. It's more about the consistency, the shift overall, versus just, you know, oh, do these three exercises, right? Because most people, let's be real, aren't going to do their three exercises, or they'll do them for a couple weeks and then, oh, I guess I'm done with it. But if you can incorporate to their everyday, these little tiny things, they're things that they end up just doing regularly.
Absolutely.
I love it. So I know you said you don't like to share your big goals, but we have to ask, we always ask all our guests on this podcast of, you know, where do you see yourself in the next 5 years, and what's next?
You know what? I would have told you that 2020 would have been a master year. I had this crazy year planned of just so many tours for speaking and competing. And I was like, hey, I got 14 flights this year. I don't even know how I'm going to manage all that, because I'm afraid of flying. I hate flying. That's a whole nother story. But I was like, shoot, I got 14 trips, but hey, it's going to be an epic year. And I will say that this whole COVID-19 situation has changed my plans for this year. So this year has really been about just looking at the communities and saying, how do I break down those barriers? There were geographical barriers, there were financial barriers to even work with people. And I've just been like, hey, if you ask, you know, it's like one of my coaches says, you don't get what you don't ask for. And if a studio says, hey, you know what, we're really in a muck right now, can you create some yoga and Pilates workouts for me? I'm like, sure. Give me like a week, and maybe I could generate one a week and put that on a private YouTube channel for you. Will that work? So it's just been really fun to meet new people and connect in new ways. And it's been a year of just giving back and really loving it. I do have a big goal. I have two big goals. One of them, I actually am launching a new online course, and it's my first online course I've built for myself. Now, I've taught for 10 years online, but I've never built something. So I'm building Elevate Your Energy Masterclass. So that's kind of just a big, big launch where people can look at, hey, what am I doing every day? How am I looking at my environment? What kind of yoga do I do? What kind of meditation? Just to bring us back to center again. So that's kind of that is really a big goal. But that's actually launching June 1st.
So needed right now too.
Yeah, absolutely. And then plan to compete at the World TriFit in October, assuming that goes as planned and doesn't get canceled because of COVID-19.
So you've competed in TriFit. Is this a world?
Nope. This is the World TriFit, and it's in October. Yeah, so
the same one.
Fingers crossed, because I am mentally prepared for that. I'm working my choreography for that, and really, really excited. It's kind of the highlight of my year, so fingers crossed that we actually get to do this competition this year.
That's awesome, and to see all your hard work pay off. But it sounds like, regardless of what happens, you're doing what you're meant to do, for sure.
Trying to follow that path.
Okay, and last question, because this is another question we always have to ask. What is the best thing that's happened to you this week?
You know what? It is one of my patients saying, I'm glad I get to work with you. Because I have to admit, in healthcare, so many times, it's like teaching. We call it a thankless job, because people say, I want, I'm not there yet. This isn't fast enough. And they just are in their own heads all the time. And I get it. We're all in our own heads all the time. We all have our goals. We all have our things we want to accomplish, and we all want it yesterday. And just hearing, I'm glad I get to work with you, is amazing. It is truly amazing.
It's a thank you. Yeah, just a simple thank you. I love that. Oh, that's huge. Well, this has been such a joy interviewing and chatting with you. I think there's a lot of great takeaways from today's episode. If our audience wants to check out your upcoming course and hang out with you on social media, where's the best place to find you?
I think there's two great ways to find me. One is my website, because I link everything that's going on through there. So that is HTTP, of course, and then your slashes, and then it's my name. So MeredithButulis.com, and all my social media links are on there. I have a bunch of just free stuff out there right now. I have a neck stress relief guide. I just posted something for Sweat Minnesota, but if somebody happens to click through that link and click all the way through, they're going to find some extra free workouts that I just put up for this weekend's event. So, you know, it's out there for the taking. If you happen to click on the link, go for it. Enjoy it. It's all free.
Hey, love it.
And then the other great way, I'm always putting stuff on Instagram, which I didn't start Instagram till October, but that's Dr. Meredith Butulis. So DR.MeredithButulis. And probably one other good way, if you're on a Facebook, if you're a Facebook person, we actually started a open group called Fitness Focus Fuel. And that's actually Corey Grenz and I, my better half. And we are just saying, hey, what can we do to give back and help the world? And we're out there. We're just like doing some live videos and we're answering people's questions. Anything related to fitness, focus, or fuel, which is basically working out, your mindset, or what you're eating. And it's just our way of giving back. We don't ask anything in return for this.
I love it. Well, we'll be sure to definitely link to all those in the show notes. And we look forward to your course coming out. So exciting. And seeing everything else that you do in the future.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me and sharing with your audience today. I love to hear from people. So if people want to DM me on Facebook or Instagram or send me an email, all of those methods work. I check them all pretty much every 2 days. And I would love to know, like, what do you guys take away from what I've shared with you today, and how are you using it in your life, and what questions do you have about how you are using it?
Yes. Type up your, what do you do? Screenshot from today's episode and type your takeaway and tag Fit Friends Happy Hour and
love it.
Dr. Butulis. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Glad to share with your audience today.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.